Hey, this is Rob McCollum, one of the producers of 1865. Welcome to Inside the Episode, 1865, Episode 3. I hope you've just listened to the episode. You know what's happening. If not, listen to it first. We are going to go into spoilers here, but a lot more story has happened. A lot of things have gone on. I am fascinated for you to find out what's true, what's fiction, and where the gray area is. And the two guys that are the masters of gray area, Eric Archilla and Steve Walters, the two writers of this project. Guys, welcome back.
Hey, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
So we hear a lot in this episode. A lot of new threads are outlined, but it starts with a flashback to when Edwin Stanton's son passed, which happened during the Lincoln administration.
That's correct, yeah.
Summer of 62.
And for Stanton, and I believe this is a line in a later episode, death is no stranger to him. He experienced a tremendous amount of tragedy in his life. His son James died. He had another daughter that died. His brother died. It's just melancholy darkness followed Stanton around his entire life. His first wife, yes.
The other piece of information that comes out here is that Lincoln thinks of him as his rock. And Robert makes that point. Robert Lincoln, played expertly by Stephen Walters, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot that
cameo.
I did that.
Cameo role there. Well played. The idea that even though they butted heads a lot, because, you know, many people say that Stanton is the one that dragged Lincoln kicking and screaming towards emancipation and was the driving force to getting him over that line. But,
well, I think Stanton would certainly say that. Yeah. I don't know if everybody else would. Yeah, you know, the relationship between Stanton and Lincoln is very interesting. And, you know, they had a complicated relationship. They did not like each other when they first met, but that relationship evolved into a friendship and a relationship of mutual respect over time.
And the reason we chose this moment is because a lot of historians pick this moment where Stanton's son dies. That's where they found a mutual connection.
Because of Willie.
Stanton had lost his son and Lincoln had just lost his son, Willie. And they kind of bonded over the loss of their sons.
Yeah.
Well, the fruits of that relationship were a plan for Reconstruction.
And at the center of this question of Reconstruction, it's really a sort of two-sided coin. On one hand, you have the question of amnesty, the question of will we treat the South with leniency or will we be punitive? And then on the other side of that question is, what are we going to do with the Southern state governments? And, you know, this question is really litigated throughout the first days of Johnson's presidency. And in fact, they have a cabinet meeting the day after Johnson, or the day, I think it was the same day that he was sworn in, right?
I think it was the day after.
It was the day after. And this is the question, and Wells writes about it in his diary. This is the question that's being discussed. And so I'll put on my history nerd hat for a little bit. There's basically something that was called the 10% rule. And it was something that Lincoln had started to kind of dip his toes into advocating for. And it was this idea that we were not going to let the Southern states back into the government in the wake of the Civil War's end until 10% of the population swore a loyalty oath to uphold the laws of emancipation. Then you have radical Republicans in Congress, of which Lincoln really wasn't. Lincoln is, I mean, a lot of modern historians call Lincoln a radical Republican. Lincoln was really a moderate. He was a unifier. But the radical Republicans wanted a much higher threshold. They wanted a 50% threshold. And so this question of like, well, where was Lincoln going to land on this? Was he going to stay in the sort of 10% range or was he going to move up to the 50% range is a question that we'll never know the answer to. We know that over time, Lincoln evolved on the question of emancipation and equality, at least evolved and perhaps he always felt that way, but certainly an evolution in what he said publicly. Perhaps he would have evolved and moved the way of the radical Republicans, but we just don't know. But what we do know is, and I think, Eric, you can talk about this, we know that Stanton believed that Lincoln wanted a more punitive stance towards the South.
Yes. Actually, a lot of talk in Stanton's biographies and writings that he fought literally days before Lincoln died and convinced Lincoln not to allow surrender terms, that he wanted to make sure that the South was completely defeated and that they were not going to just let the South back in without having some type of retribution.
Well, and the reason that this question of amnesty, which is another way of saying pardon and forgiveness, the reason that this question matters so much is because if you forgive, if you pardon the entire South, including Jefferson Davis, all the Confederate leadership and all the Confederate generals, and if you pardon the plantation owners, the people that funded the rebellion, funded the insurgency or the Confederate army, if you pardon all these people, then the Southern governments get to come back into the Union immediately with no punishment. But more importantly, everybody gets their lands back.
Yeah, there's two parts of this, and I want to make sure it's clear. A, there is the question of if the Southern states are allowed back in
and their senators and representatives come back in, the radical Republicans no longer have a veto-proof majority.
That's correct.
And if they lose their majority by letting them back in, they don't have the power they had. That's one thing. And then also, it is the lands and money from the plantation owners in the South that are expected to fund Reconstruction. So they need that money for that site. So talk about that, especially the land issue is huge. And it's talked about here when we meet Langston.
That's right. John Mercer Langston, who was the Inspector General of the Freedmen's Bureau. But I think the big picture is really this. There are some people like Andrew Johnson who want to keep the white power structure of the South in place. There are other people like Edwin Stanton who do not. And the question of lands and power and wealth is really articulated through the character of John Mercer Langston.
Langston's actually one of the characters that we got really fascinated with when we first discovered him, because people generally talk a lot about Frederick Douglass as being the big civil rights leader of the time, but his nemesis in fighting that political battle in the freedmen world was John Mercer Langston, who's a very amazing character. And he actually was part of planning Harper's Ferry, where John Brown first got hung and started off the Civil War.
And he also recruited hundreds of black soldiers during the war towards the Union cause. And him and Stanton worked together throughout the war. And then, of course, Stanton gives him this position inside the Freedmen's Bureau, which is really another way of saying Langston worked for a government agency that was operated and run by the War Department. So Stanton is in charge of the Freedmen's Bureau, is a really kind of simplistic way to put it. And the Freedmen's Bureau has a job, and that job is to deliver to the freedmen in the South hospitals, schools, public services, and most importantly, land. And Eric, why is land the most important thing?
Land is an important thing because in a lot of states, you have to have land to be able to vote.
And so Langston and Stanton are kind of working together to lay the foundation for Negro suffrage.
Well, so yeah, this is kind of the grand bargain that he strikes here of let's wait on suffrage. We're not going to talk about suffrage. Let's just focus on land, because that is a step towards suffrage that they won't be able to take away. If you've got your land, then you'll be able to vote in the coming days. This really reminded me, of course, I was first reading this when also I had watched All the Way about LBJ and his attempts to try to get Martin Luther King to say, let's don't push for everything. Let's push for what we can get right now. So a lot of the 1960s conversations were happening in 1860s.
That's correct. And it's a little bit of creative license on our part to say that Langston struck that compromise. But that question of compromise, that question of incremental progress, that question of are we going to get something or nothing, was very much at play in the 1860s. And so we wanted to dramatize that inside of Stanton's story.
And the other thing that helps us is Langston was in Washington and saw Lincoln's last speech and was there when the assassination happened. So he was actually in Washington while all of this was going on. So it was
he met with Andrew Johnson.
And he did meet with Andrew Johnson as the head of the Equal Rights League.
Yeah, which was similar, which actually became the NAACP.
And it's just fascinating to me. It's one of the key threads of this story that I think is so interesting, is that questions that were not answered, questions that were left untended in 1865, were still being discussed in the 1960s in the United States and the Equal Rights Movement.
Yeah, and I would say, this is again just Steve Walter's opinion, I would say that's because the real questions of political equality were never resolved during the Reconstruction era. The question of the states' rights as they conflict with the federal government's rights were left unresolved.
Yeah, it was fascinating to me. Again, this is just a teaser for you listeners, but it's amazing how the specific events of these characters that we have introduced to you actually have a huge impact on the way that that story does or does not unfold moving forward.
And I just want to acknowledge for anybody who's listening, I think we're stepping into some, you know, pretty politically hot territory when we're talking about Reconstruction. And I think there's a reason why Reconstruction is not widely studied in history classes. And I think it's because it's complicated, it's dark, and at times the outcome is pretty horrific. But I will say this, there were a lot of people in the South that were fighting in the Civil War for the rebels out of a multiplicity of reasons. But what is absolutely true is that there was a white power structure in place. And that white power structure was distinct and different from, say, the poor working folks of the South. And I think that's important to say that. That question is very complicated to look at during modern times, because the way that we understand bigotry today is much more evolved than the way that they understood it in that time. But I think that this question of who's going to have the power, who's going to shape the future of this country, is what's really at stake for Edwin Stanton inside this story. And for him, the answer to that question is, I'm going to preserve Lincoln's legacy.
One of the other major threads of this entire story is the way personal events affect large political events. And one of the personal events that we talk about in this episode, Lucy Hale and Robert Lincoln's engagement is off, because Robert Lincoln believes that Lucy Hale was cavorting with John Wilkes Booth. Now, when this was a part of the play that I first saw in 2013, I'm like, that's fiction. They made that up. That's a great storyline, but no way that really happened. Did that really happen?
That really happened. Booth was literally engaged to the daughter of a senator secretly.
Who was also dating Robert Lincoln. This is what blows my mind.
Also dating Robert Lincoln. And her father was
dating Robert Lincoln, daughter of a major Republican senator,
one of the founders of the Republican Party,
John Wilkes Booth,
and a major abolitionist in contrast to everything that John Wilkes Booth was fighting for. And one of the places we take creative license in the story is to say that Lucy and Robert were engaged. We know that they were suitors, but there was never actually an engagement between the two of them. But
there was a courtship.
There was a courtship there. And Booth and Lucy were definitely engaged in secret, and the family knew of that engagement.
Yeah, this was one of those facts that when I first heard about it, Eric showed me, I was like, well, there's our play. I mean, that's certainly the most interesting interpersonal dynamic of this love triangle between, President Lincoln's son, President Lincoln's murderer, and the daughter of a famous abolitionist senator who is kind of like the Bernie Sanders of his time.
Just seems like such blatant fiction. And then I remember early days, I kept pressing you like, No, but really, is this really?
Absolutely.
We have the letters.
We have letters from him to his brother, to his mother, talking about his engagement. Edwin Booth, his brother, later talks about Lucy Hale and how she would have gone to the gallows for John Wilkes Booth.
And what's equally interesting about this love triangle is what we don't know the answers to. We don't know if John Wilkes Booth was really in love with Lucy, or if he was just pretending to be in love with Lucy to gain political access. So we'll get more into that in later episodes.
Yeah, I do want to say this first pass of the story very much deals with Stanton and his storyline and those in his sphere. But we are going to have three special episodes that show the story from the perspective of John Wilkes Booth and his fellow conspirators.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of a three-parter. It's a bit like a movie in that way, because there are three about, half-hour episodes each. So it's about 90 minutes total, but we break it up into an episodic fashion.
So stay tuned till the end of the series.
Stay tuned.
Speaking of kind of like a movie, I do want to talk just for a second about the way 1865 sounds, because I wanted in this next section of the Inside the Episode to talk to Lindsey Graham. Lindsey, welcome.
Hello.
So you have been doing an incredible amount of work, after Steve and Eric did all of their writing and we did all the recording over the past year and a half. Then once they were all in the can, you started the arduous task of assembling those and editing them and putting them into an environment. Talk a little bit about the overall idea you had for the sound of 1865.
Well, my first experience with audio drama comes from the project we did together, Terms, and that was largely done out of this impulse to, pull it away from radio plays and put it more into a cinematic universe. What I mean by that is that with a lot of audio drama or radio plays, you don't feel that verisimilitude, that realness. And so for 1865, my thought process was, how can I take this even further and increase the reality? We record in a very controlled studio environment. It's padded walls, the whole bit. You can think of it. It's a very small space. So if you listen to just the raw audio, it's very direct and sterile. That's great for editing. You can do a lot of work splicing sentences together. As you mentioned, we've been recording this over a year and a half. And so some of these single sentences might be of that vintage. The first half is from July of last year and last half is yesterday. So that's the magic of being controlled in a studio environment. You have that ability. What you don't have is any sense of space. And in 1865 in particular, this needed to feel very real and very historical. We couldn't go outside and record anywhere in the real world, like some do, and certainly like movie sets do, because there are planes and cars
and air conditioners
humming. And we had to get rid of all of that. Another reason to record it in studio. But then after we're done, we have to inject the sense of space and the sense of realism.
I think you have achieved that. I know the first time I listened to it, I was in my car in just sitting in the driveway and felt like I could feel it. Like there was a boom mic on a movie set following these people through these 1860s houses. So my question is, you have this clean audio from this small studio. How do you do that? How do you make it sound like it's in that world?
Yeah, movie sets are great and sound stages are perfect, but we clearly don't have either of those things or the budget to procure them. What we do have is really good performances and really clean recordings of them. So what then I have to do is two really critical things. No one lives in an anechoic chamber of just no noise. And in our modern ears are filled with the hum of modern appliances. So if we strip all of that out, now I have to construct something to replace it. Just the hum of everyday life, but it can't be our everyday life. It has to be everyday life of 1865. One way to do that, I guess, would be to like go to Colonial Williamsburg and record ambient sounds, but that's not within reach either. So it became a task of just building environments. Every room we have in the series, Stanton's office, the Peterson house where Lincoln is first brought.
Johnson's hotel room.
Right. Every single location then has an underneath background sound. They're all different, but they have things like a grandfather clock in the corner, or the rattle of a carriage down the street, or even the bubbling, frothy sound of a gas lamp or heater. All of these sounds are placed in an audio space such that you could hopefully hear that the grandfather clock is in the corner, and that on your left is where the corridor is, and other people are going up and down it. And in the hotel rooms, you can hear the people upstairs. So that's all bubbling underneath the dialogue. The second thing you need to do is then place the dialogue in that room. One thing I really wanted to do, though, was build a very particular and realistic sense of space. And so, actually, we went over to your house.
Yeah, this was the one part that I got to help with, and it was
right.
Really fun.
Your house, like the building that the studio is in, is a circa 1920 wood structure here in Dallas. And it's got the good solid wood doors and creaky wood floors that you might imagine that an 1865 house would have. And so there was a day, an evening, in which we would have the house to ourselves and turn off the fridge and turn off the air conditioner. And this was not, this was in the middle of summer, so it wasn't that pleasant.
We suffered for our art that right. day. We did.
But so then I set up a speaker and a series of microphones in the room, and I recorded the room. I don't want to get too technical, but we've sent a signal through the speakers, and then recorded the signal. And then in software, you can emulate what that room sounds like. And we chose different positions in the room where our characters might be. And so with a high degree of realism, I can place a character in the back of the room, in the middle of the room, you know, to the left, to the right. And then we smartly recorded a bunch of footsteps and coming in and out of that same room to indicate characters coming and going. We would put on different shoes and walk with different gaits. And what I think is especially pleasing is all of the footsteps coming down the corridor before someone opens the door. So you,
yeah, that was my favorite moment when I realized, like, oh, it's not only that someone knocks at the door, but you hear them approaching the door and getting
right.
there. Yeah,
and it's funny how much realism that adds to it. There's a built-in tension, subliminal that you don't even know. And you know, the script says knocking on door, but there's 6 seconds of prelude to that helps you feel the environment. And so we did it for that room and for other rooms. We flipped it around. And built this soundscape. So now just purely within software, I can take a character and move them around the room. When Johnson stands up and gets a drink, it feels like he actually does, and he never leaves the microphone or at all, the actor.
Well, we've gotten 1 through 4 mixed at this point, so you have lots and lots of work still to do at this point in the story. So I'm going to bless and release you. Please go back to your cave and and start mixing.
Yeah, will do.
That's it for this episode of 1865. Listen to episode 4 of our podcast and then tune in here to find out what was true and what wasn't. I'm Rob McCollum. Thanks for listening.